Maxine Waters was the second House Democrat to launch a spirited defense on ethics charges this week. On Tuesday, it was longtime New York Congressman Charles Rangel's turn. He gave a rambling speech on the House floor saying he won't resign.
What about me? I don't want anyone to feel embarrassed, awkward. Hey, if I was you, I may want me to go away too. I am not going away. I am here.
Well, we're going to talk about a few things political now. E.J. Dionne and David Brooks have the week off, and instead I'm joined by political consultant Karen Finney, formerly with the Democratic National Committee. Welcome back, Karen.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
And also Raihan Salam, who blogs for the National Review, and he's a fellow at the New America Foundation. Raihan, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
And Karen Finney, let's start with you. We got a midterm election year where Democrats are worried about big losses, possibly losing control of Congress. Not exactly the message they would want out here this week.
Well, it's obviously not the kind of story you want front and center this week, but I think the differences between the approaches of the two, obviously going public, whereas Charlie Rangel made more of a personal appeal, and clearly Maxine believed that she had the facts on her side, show that these are two very different cases. Both, you know, will have their say. And I think Democrats need to not be defensive on these issues because, again, you know, there was the promise to drain the swamp. And part of the reason that we're even talking about these cases is because you have an active ethics committee that has now brought charges. It's not like some of the cases we saw during Republican control where things like Mark Foley were swept under the rug.
Raihan Salam, do you think there's a compelling Republican narrative that can be spun out of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that both of these candidates represent, for many Americans, an arrogance of power and an indifference to the demands of the mass public in terms of transparency. It could be that procedurally this worked just fine. It could be that actually they absolutely followed the letter of the law. But it certainly is a set of practices that strike many citizens, including constituents of both Congressman Rangel and Waters, as unseemly.
I want to. There were a number of primary elections this week, and I want to focus on one, the Senate race in Colorado. On the Republican side, a Tea Party favorite was the winner there. Raihan Salam, do you share concern that we're hearing among Republicans that Republicans are voting for candidates in the primary who really don't stand a good chance in the general election in November?
Well, I think it's important to look back to 2006 and 2008 when there were a number of Democratic congressional candidates who were similarly described as outside the mainstream. One good example that David Weigel raised in Slate recently is that of Carol Shea Porter, an activist who had said very incendiary things about President Bush, yet who won that election and who won re-election in 2008 by an even wider margin against a fairly popular conservative incumbent. And that's because of the broader cycle that prevailed. So I think that many of these candidates who are currently considered a little too extreme will be considered less so by the time the election rolls around.
Carol Shea Porter in New Hampshire. Karen Finney, I want to turn to the Democratic side of that Colorado Senate race. It was the incumbent, Michael Bennett, who did manage a victory and sort of defying the anti-incumbent storyline that's out there. A big relief for President Obama, who endorsed and campaigned for Bennett. I want to ask you about something that Senator Bennett said on Wednesday when I asked him whether it would help him or hurt him to have the president standing next to him in Colorado heading towards November. And he demurred. This is what he said. I don't know. I think it certainly helped during the primary and will make a judgment going forward. How do you read that?
I read that as showing how unpredictable the electorate is right now. And as a savvy candidate, Bennett knows that. You know, one of the things we saw in the immediate aftermath of 2008 is that this block of Obama voters, that coalition of voters that President Obama put together in 2008, they don't see themselves as beholden to either party, which means in a midterm election, if they turn out, they're very much up for grabs for both parties. I think that's part of what you're seeing play out in Colorado. You know, I think that being said, the White House and the Democratic National Committee are walking a fine line between, on the one hand, you know, they rolling out their resources and their machine, whether it's financial and phone bankers and their sort of grassroots organization, as well as bringing the president in, and in some cases, perhaps taking a step back. I did want to just respond to one thing that Raihan said about some of the extremism in some of the Republican candidates, because even Republicans have admitted that the best way for Sharon Angle to win would be to put her in witness protection between now and the election, because some of the things that she said are so extreme. And I don't think that goes away between now and the election. And I think it does.
And, of course, Democratic analysts have said colorful things about Democratic candidates historically.
But I don't think any Democrats have ever said that we should do away with Social Security or that the Civil Rights Act was a government overreach.
So. Sharon Angle, we should explain, the Republican nominee for Senate in Nevada running against against Harry Reid.
Right.
Let's wrap up with one thing here. White House advisor David Axelrod is quoted as saying this week that, that the predictions of a wave election this year are wrong, that he says this will not be a formulaic year. That's his words. This will be decided race by race, not by some wave. Raihan Salam, what do you think? Is it a wave or not?
Well, I think it makes perfect sense for David Axelrod to say that.
But,
yes. Of course, I think that we have every indication that this will be a wave election, not necessarily because of any unique incompetence on the part of the incumbent congressional majority, but rather because this is a very powerful economic whipsaw. And whenever we see that, we tend to see dramatic change in the composition of Congress. Whether or not that means that control of the House or the Senate will change remains an open question. But I do think it's going to make the president's life very difficult in terms of achieving a lot of his legislative priorities going forward.
And very briefly, Karen Finney, you get the last word.
I think when you see a confluence of so many different factors, I don't think you can say this is going to be a sea change election. Certainly there may be a wave, but I think it's going to be a wave in a non-traditional way that we probably can't see yet in terms of what are the characteristics of those candidates that are brought into office.
Thanks to you both. Karen Finney, political consultant and liberal political commentator for TheGrio.com, and Raihan Salam, a blogger with The National Review.